Disciple 1, Disciple 1 to Guru 1. Disciple 1 to Guru 1. Come in, Guru. Can you hear me?
Father, hence my slack, my gaining of complete and total slack, and regaining it from the people who have stolen from me over the years.
Well, just basically that I think what you're saying is pretty hip.
Yeah, that's right. It is hip. There's no doubt about that. Yeah, Mike, what do you think of the rave reviews my show's getting?
Your show, Bob?
Well, when's your show on?
Well, my show's on Thursday mornings.
Well, mine's on Wednesday at midnight.
Every other Wednesday at midnight, Bob.
Yeah, the Church of the Subgenius.
With Mike Dyer.
And J.R. Bob Dobbs. Mike, some more rave reviews?
Yeah, sure, Bob.
Really provides me a meaning for my existence.
Well.
This is exhilarating. I really get off on this sort of stuff, Bob. This is real radio.
Yes.
Yeah.
The continuity will take care of these problems.
That's right. There's no way that my work is going to be stopped.
The thing is, I'm the greatest artist alive today.
I've been just waiting and waiting, Bob. It's John Curry. Please give me a call. Thanks.
Message for Bob. Thursday night, winning number was 778. Friday night, winning number was 144. I guess that makes me a prophet. Check it out in page 2 of the Sunday Sun under... pick 3 results. That's your phone number, like I said.
Oh, Bob, I'm merging with your fragments. I am loving every minute of it. It is so wonderful. It goes over and over and over in my tape deck all the time in the car, and I love it. I keep turning it on and turning it off, and turning it on and turning it off. It's Sue in Halifax, and thanks for sending me that wonderful, wonderful tape.
Hi, Mike.
How are you?
Fine. Nice messages. You didn't try to call me. That's a theme, right? Many people can't get through anymore. 595-1478, so start calling now. You know, we want to get through. And we just continued from 2 weeks ago. Many topics left dangling.
So a new book.
Yeah, Stang knows that I've got a control on the gold market, and he's trying to catch a little spare change. He's got a new book out called Three-Fisted Tales of Bob, resonant with my topics of late. The subtitle, Short Stories in the Subgenius Mythos. Note he says mythos, myth, Bob's a myth. We explained that months ago, and I'm elaborating on that continuously.
Mm-hmm.
The second message, Mike, was from Dublin. What he's referring to there is that he told me 2 weeks ago after the show in a long private consultation that he noticed that our phone number, 595-1478, the 14 and the 78, were resonating in the daily lotto called Pick 3. I think it's daily. Anyway, it's called Pick 3. And so he told me that night, and he was right. He said he's betting on variations of 47, 78, and 14, something like that. And they showed up in the Thursday and Friday numbers, I think, Friday and Saturday. So then the weekly pick three numbers are inventoried, reviewed of the week in the Sunday, not the Sun, the Sunday Star. He made a little error there. So he's saying that the slack he picked up from the show has made him, telepathic, and he's focusing on the lotto games. He has a lot of time to study the patterns in that area. And he sees our number. Our phone number is... a hidden ground there. So that's what that second message was.
Okay.
And the third one is a little promo for our Fragments with Bob tape and the Bob Dogma, which we're offering $5 each here at the station. Come on down and get one. Gives you the content of Bob, his perceptual continuity over the last 6 months. Mike, we got a call?
No.
Okay.
It's far too early.
Well, okay, tonight's an interesting night. The time has come, Mike. We know... the RCMP and such inside Big Brother institutions don't get much access to the major media, and therefore they've turned over the brain police control to that global Esperanto, any medium you want, movie, magazine, records, TV, radio, books. That is the new brain police. It's the global Esperanto or content for the effects of media, which I control. The content I leave to the pinks to spread their momentary universal merging effect around a mood content concept. The thing is that what I'm saying is that Bob's going to be covered in the major media pretty shortly, and we have a member of the global theatrical brain police here tonight, monitoring and giggling, knowing he's got a monopoly on this situation at this point. He can be the fulcrum of the Esperanto for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, he's here to study the show, monitor, and therefore, this means, and I'm shifting into a darker tone now, Mike.
Yes.
This means, as a result of this global Esperanto coverage, we've got some difficult days ahead. But it really doesn't matter with me now, because I've been to the mountaintop. And I don't mind. Like anybody, I would like to live a long life. Anonymity has its place. Or discarnativity has its place. All right? Discarnate is anonymous. So I'm saying to the subgenius people who've made this show, the important, I use the word again, wake it up again, fulcrum of global collective consciousness, the new word, the word itself, including all the tactile qualities of all other media, subsumed. Therefore, I want the church members to outperform tonight. Let's really let yourself be heard, because you're going to be covered tonight. You, what you say may be significant enough to be part of the imminent global Esperanto, which will give this guy a few seconds as the fulcrum of conceptual red herring. All right, so tonight's the night. Look, the phone, there it is, the ready, Subgenius One calling. I mean, let your beefs out, let your praises and joys and frustrations. Tell the global Esperanto what this all means. Take the call, Mike.
I can't, Bob.
Okay. We've got some difficult days ahead. But it really doesn't matter with me now, because I've been to the mountaintop. And I don't mind. Like anybody, I would like to live a long life. Anonymity has its place. Mike, is this the Mike Hansen version?
We'll try.
Okay.
I see Kellen. Are they there? Hello?
Well, they were there, right? They hung up.
Yeah.
The thing is, so it's working. Now, did they expect to hear it on the radio? Did they get confused? Tell them, Mike. Mike's got been helped by our... What is Mike Hansen's function here? Program coordinator?
Yeah.
And so he's given Mike some new tips on how we can, the callers can hear us, not just through the radio, but through the phone.
We hope. Hello.
Yeah, you're ready.
Somebody's giggling.
I told you I'm sick.
You were sick?
I'm sick.
Oh, it's Andrew.
Which Andrew? He needs coaching. Silence can be obscene, I guess. You're not into dead air. So, I mean, this is what they want to say. They want to be the form, not the content, for the global Esperanto. They're communicating what we're talking about. Silence. Silence is Bob. Bob is golden.
There it is.
There's the global buzz. Solar Esperanto. Was I on? I just sort of went low there for a second.
Yeah,
I should be saying Solar Esperanto. So, we've got some difficult moments ahead, Mike. Our callers are cooperating with a subgenius. What? What is it? Louder than words? What speaks louder than words? What speaks louder than words, Mike? Not pictures anymore. The interval, the resonant interval, which includes all sounds and commonly reduced to silence. Silence, like the color black. The absence of sound contains all sounds. No, maybe you could say silence is white, contains all sounds. So what's noise? No, noise contains all sounds. What would you say on that one? Black is the absence of color. White contains all colors. Therefore, noise contains all sounds. And silence is the absence of noise or sound. So silence corresponds to black? What about white noise? Contradiction in terms, right? How'd I go? Where'd you get this buzz thing? It's great, Mike.
It's not intentional, but it's nice, isn't it?
It sounds corporate.
Okay, go
Thank
ahead.
Thank you so very much for letting me in again since
You're
last
welcome.
Week.
You're
I was
welcome.
On telling you that I was to have no stove for Christmas. Because of your program, of this program, you caused a miracle to happen.
Oh, you're welcome.
When I had hung up from talking with you,
mm-hmm.
my phone rang instantly, and he had been trying to get me while I was talking with you. It was a man who had an answering machine that someone had given me a number to call earlier in the afternoon and called. One reason being that he had just come back home after having done 200 miles of traveling that day. Now, I want to tell you the marvelous thing that happened. Pardon me, I've got a cold.
We've got another caller, actually.
She's got a call, Mike.
Our baby had been listening to this
there
program.
There is someone else on the line, man.
She called her son.
She's on a kinetic roll.
I'm getting a little ahead of my...
yes, you are. You do
take a little
call.
Head.
From the first my stove had we don't have the clock. The chimney. The fireman who had come and it, a little cleaning myself and put a sort of crystal around. You caused a miracle to happen.
Thank you.
Thank you so very much for letting me in again since last week.
Should we go to our other caller?
Yeah. Excellent work. Excellent work.
You caused a miracle to happen. Yeah.
God bless you.
We're converting the brain police immediately.
Hi, C. Taylor.
Hi, Bob.
Yeah, Sean?
Hi, I've been doing my homework.
Was that your tape?
No, it was my tape.
Well, 2 weeks ago, did you call in your tape first or were you second?
I was on later.
Yeah, you had the FM 108 or the other person had FM 108?
The other person had FM 108.
All right, so you were the one with the kids screaming in the park kind of effect.
Yeah, that
yeah,
was me.
All right, I wasn't sure. You've been doing your homework, you got some new stuff.
Yeah, I came to feed you because you're my ma, and you're always right.
Yeah.
Your ma.
You mean ma, the Japanese interval.
Yep,
yeah.
your ma, the Japanese interval, and you're always right, on the right side anyways.
Yeah, how did you find the word ma? What have you been visualizing?
Oh, I was just thinking of women.
Yeah, but no, where did you get that from? There's only one person who'll tell you about Ma.
You told me about Ma, Bob.
Yeah, but there's visual reference points. You didn't do that part.
No, I didn't do that
part. All right, so you're just resonating on what the verb, the word itself, evokes for you.
Well, in several ways, yeah.
Yeah, the big missing link in the movie The Godfather or The Godfather series is that they hadn't done their... Who was it? Scorsese, Coppola, one of those guys made those series, and they didn't do their anthropological research into Italian society because the Godfather is ruled by the Godmother.
Yeah, the Godmother.
Yeah, and so the title is a red herring and misnomer, and they keep busting the male members of the mafia, and the women are just raking in that surveillance ability through software known as SMAC.
Yeah, did you see even this week the FBI did a major sweep and picked up a supposed godfather, right? But again, they missed the mark. They got the godfather. They got the godmother.
Yeah,
they're never going to get it right.
I mean, you know, Connie. Just think of Connie. I mean, Connie's a hidden ground here, maybe, right?
Yeah,
Bob
she
and
is.
Connie. And Connie shows up occasionally. Yeah, Sean, Ma, that's right. Tribal societies are mafia-ridden.
Mm-hmm.
Electric societies, as before that, pre-litter societies were mafia-ridden. We're mafia-ridden today. The point is now is that the major media archetypes are the mafia effects.
Mm-hmm.
They are. And Big Brother had to go inside, and he's too busy fighting himself like the legs of an octopus, twisting around and confusing each other. Therefore, they keep arresting and freeing each other, right? Because they're not the hidden ground. The hidden ground is the mafia of the media archetypes. That's ma.
And the emphasis is on mafia. It's not dadfia, is it?
Not gafia?
Mafia. No, it's not.
Yeah.
It's not Dad's Fiat. It's Mafia.
Yeah, it's right? Mafia.
I mean, it's right there for them, and they still miss it.
Good one, Sean. You're hot today, Sean.
Man, the eyes are blind. They always look with their eyes instead of listening or touching, maybe.
Yeah, FBI.
Yeah,
I spy with my little CIA. I.
Yeah, they will.
The old private barons.
And it's B-O-B. Oh.
Pirate barons. Pirates, that's piracy. You know, that's the prank queen. See, if you look in Finnegan's Wake, the second Thunder.
I was just reading about the prank queen. Like,
in
2 minutes ago. 2 minutes.
In War and Peace in the Global Village?
No, I was reading the prank queen in Finnegan's Wake.
Good, about page 22, right?
Yeah,
22,
exactly.
And right on page 22 is the episode of the prank queen, and the prank queen's the second Thunder, and that's the HCE being womanly controlled. He's called the new womanly man.
Mm-hmm.
That's what Eve means. I mean, it's not that Eve is evil. It's just that when man is extended first through the earlier specialist technologies and tools, he has a visual bias.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, his blind spot is acoustic space, which is the old form of woman. Mm-hmm. All right?
Yeah, because she put the nail on top.
The nail?
Yeah.
What nail?
Talks about the prank queen. She puts the nail on the top.
Oh, okay. You're quoting Jim there. All right. The nail. Could be the snail.
The snail.
Yeah, it's a slow nail.
Yeah.
It's painful. It took us, 2,500 plus years to get out of visual space.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're into acoustic space, and of course we're not using those terms anymore, are we? We've moved to kinetic and tactile. I do take this opportunity to explain that tactile, another word, is telekinetic. Telekinetic space is the content of the electrified environment, the simultaneous environment.
Mm-hmm.
So the kinetic environments, the old hardware, are moved simultaneously around the planet, often with cyclicity, in a sense of cycles. So telekinetic is another term for for tactile versus mm-hmm. kinetic. So we're well beyond the categories for men and women right now, and we're just superhuman discarnate things right now.
Mm-hmm.
That's why women's lip rose up as an objection to be assimilated into the old categories. They don't apply anymore.
Mm-hmm.
They just want a role mobility like a man thought he had, but he's not very good at it, so women are going to dominate from here on in.
And the New Age community is...
The New Age, you're saying?
Yeah, the New Age, you know, the New Age groups and stuff, they're always trying to... they reflect that to this desire to be telekinetics. But the fact is they are telekinetics. Telekinesis becomes an art form.
That's right. Well, they're trying to conceptualize it. That's their problem. And you notice that their concept is no concept. They're trying to articulate percept.
Mm-hmm.
They had a big special on Harry Brown speaking out last Thursday night. It was one of the most inarticulate shows that we've ever experienced here in Toronto. And I think they're going to have budget cuts and problems, just like TVO Imprint probably won't come back, right? They've got problems there at TVO Ontario. We've got better speaking format here. What was I just talking about, Sean?
You were talking about TVO.
Just before that, what was the content? Oh, yeah, the New Age. I'm moving fast here. I'm moving fast, Sean. I'm resonating fast. I don't want to say I'm moving. We're not moving anywhere. We're just dancing on the spot here, right?
You're
swimming on the spot. Yeah. Bobbing. You know, when you swim, you bob.
Yeah.
Bobbing. The New Age is they're trying to conceptualize the basic telekinetic percept, and they try to fit it into the old archetypal retrievals from Blavatsky back to Dahani Wahu, the Cherokee tradition, to who's before that? The Atlantis. And then they go out to Sirius and they head out to the solar system as the garbage dump, right?
They're heading back to Atlantis because that was the original Coral Society.
Coral Society?
Yeah, the Coral Society.
Did you get that? Not an oral society, a Coral Society.
Yeah.
Yeah, they. It was a study that they sang.
Yeah.
They sang, and they had great ecological sense, which we hope to mime. But we can't use their concepts for our new media ecologies.
Mm-hmm.
Man, I'm hot tonight with this brain police monitoring me. I'm just flowing with the concepts and percepts, Sean.
Yeah.
Sean, I think we're going to... You hogged the show last. It was very good 2 weeks ago. You stand in reserve, and if we fail to get some more calls in a while, you call back, all right, Sean? Because you know your stuff, and you can get me going.
Okay.
Don't forget, the X's have a press conference on April 11th.
Yep, I'll be going to that.
Yeah, that'll be... where's the hotel?
It's just south of Bloor.
Yeah, what's it's the Brownstone Hotel.
Yeah.
Tom Wu is also having a session there that night.
Tom Wu?
Real estate, Vietnamese real estate.
Oh, boy.
Welcome. Yeah.
Yeah, the Brownstone Hotel in the Yorkville Room, 15 Charles Street, $25. The Future of Ontario in the 1990s. The Future of Ontario in the 1990s, a press conference with the X's.
Mm-hmm.
That's right, the real X's will be here in Toronto on April 11th at 7:30 p.m. That will be, that's a point, Mike, that show, that's in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
When I'll be on here. But because of that kind of situation, I won't be there with the exes, but I won't be here either. So our next show is in 3 weeks while I'm thinking about it.
Oh, all right. I'll do some espionage for you, Bob.
Beg your pardon?
I'll do some espionage for you.
Thanks a lot.
Okay, we do have another call.
Great work, Sean.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
See you. Hello.
Because some difficult echoes, don't you? Doesn't that sound familiar? Mike, do you pick? It's an hour. Okay, Mike. We got somebody?
No, not right now.
Oh, yeah, there he is.
Okay. I'm not too happy with this phone situation. You know, I don't like this.
Yeah,
like
Mike, Mike chance of sabotage?
Maybe. Hi, CKLN.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello, Michael. How are you
doing? Hi, Edward.
Hi. I'm phoning in. I just thought, you know, you have company over, and you kind of put out the best silverware and everything. So your company is the Brain Police tonight, do I have that correct?
Yeah, the momentary 15 minutes a day kind of thing, you know.
You can name the publication, I think.
Yeah, the apparently this guy's scamming the this magazine to do an article on me. We should give the background, eh? The amazing background is that he interviewed me for Knot Magazine, and that's coming out on April 28th. If you want to get a copy at the Small Press Trade Fair, April 28th at Trinity Church.
Small Press Book Fair.
Small Press Book Fair at Trinity.
Trinity St. Paul's Church.
Trinity St. Paul's Church on Bloor Street, near Bathurst. But he got the idea of expanding some of the percepts I offered him in the interview into a larger article on the discarnate effect, especially after seeing Adam Agoyan's movie and Sex, Lies, and Videotape, the other one. So he presented an article to this magazine and to Lorraine Fillier, and he had interviewed Adam Agoyan and Derek DeKirchhoff, the pink director at the McLuhan program, you know, my opposition. And they looked at, Lorraine looked at what Derek said and what Adam said, keep a little Adam for color, forget Derek, Derek's too dull, make an article out of Bob. We want more on this Bob, so the article has gone beyond the discarnate effect, its content, to the phenomenon of Bob itself.
So Adam Agoyan is color, therefore you are...
Okay, color is a tactile medium, but that's a visual expression of tactility. Yeah. Whereas white and black and white, dull grays, are abstract visual space alphabetic effects of color. All right? Now, I'm tactility, which means I would include all media, which would basically be the effects on Robert here, the effects on him in doing the article, and those effects passed on to Lorraine and the audience for this magazine. So I'm anticipating the effects. That's what I am. I'm an anticipatory medium.
You know, this magazine was...
Which magazine?
Who's on first?
I'm on first, you know that. But you can join me. It's a collective operation. This magazine?
Magazine is a collective operation, and they were collectively and individually monitored for years. The editorial board and many of their writers.
Yeah, I ordered that monitoring. Eddie, I ordered that monitoring back in the 60s, early 70s, yeah. Because I didn't want them on the trail of the hidden ground. I didn't want the Brain Police working on me. So, of course, you had them monitoring the left all through the 60s and in the right, too, later. But, of course, I was a big red herring. No point in monitoring them. They're part of the global Esperanto. They're necessary to keep the economy going. Bruce Coburn's music increases fascism, destroys the Amazon. Nobody understands that. I mean, just to make a song about the Amazon provides content for electric media, which keeps you distracted and discarnate, therefore not knowing you're blowing up the planet, you know, burning it up. So, Bruce, get off, you know, get off.
I thought Sting was in charge of the Amazon.
Oh, yeah, well, I'm talking Canadian content here.
Oh, okay.
He's an operation, an appendage of Sting, but that leads to the next thing. There's a movement in Vancouver, maybe, Mike. I know Wayne Morris had a guy on who represents a group that'll have an art strike. You know about the art strike?
Oh, yeah,
comments?
The art strike, yeah.
Where's that coming out of?
That's a European-based initially, but I guess it's spreading.
Oh, well, that's a very important phenomenon.
It's a three-year art strike.
Yeah, because that's what I'm for, is art strike, but I do it on a larger level, in the solo government level, of media ecology, where we shift and respond and turn on and off the collective environments, the archetypes, the mythic images, right? But art strike, it's neat that the young kids, the tribal antennae, because the kids are always into what's really going on, mm-hmm. more than the elders. But that creates a paradoxical situation of flexible elders and rigid youth. But the rigid youth know that Bob's media ecology is a perceptual dogma for the times. And they're picking it up in their framework, their specialist private identity framework, Art Strike. I support that, Eddie. Eddie, go on.
Bob, I reason I'm phoning is because of context tonight and Brain Police.
Who are the Brain Police, right?
Well, we've been wondering that.
Well, do you know that I interviewed Bob Marshall interviewed Frank Zappa, and he asked Frank about who are the Brain Police, and he said he was still working on that. But he said nobody figured it out yet. I mean, he didn't know I was the Brain Police, but he... In his own activities, that's a main question that is like work in progress. All his conceptual continuity is revolving around who are the Brain Police. It's a question in progress. Zappa heads note. Okay?
Well, Zappa being one of your holy offices, there's a thing that's been disturbing me. Something you play on your show in November. I've talked up your show. I try to say, you know, you should listen to this great show.
No, you don't have to do that.
Well, I've given up because I was trying to say, well, you should have heard the tape he played last night. And then I start describing it. I'd gag. I'd get red in the face. My head would get a strange hollow fit because I'd find myself saying, he played a tape by one of the members, one of his holy offices last night, who was once an undersecretary appointee by John F. Kennedy. Dr. Beter, who, now here's the thing, he made a lot of money in the gold markets, therefore he must be wise. And he claimed on one of his tapes that, I'm going to start to gag again.
It's such a mirror. It's an analogical mirror, this stuff.
He claimed, give me a moment to get this out.
Yeah, okay.
That the implications of this are enormous, and I hope your guest has his pencil sharpened. Because
he does.
That Jimmy and Rosalind Carter were replaced late in Carter's term by androids.
Organic robotoids is the...
Organic robot. Now...
I'll tell you, Eddie, just hold your... Did you notice that... also, Dr. Beter said that all members of the Carter family were killed, his relatives in that. And have you noticed that every Carter, all his brothers and sisters, all died of the same disease?
Ruth Stapleton, Billy.
Billy, and there's several others. They all died of, I think it's pancreatic cancer. And the latest one happened about a month ago. Now, they all died of the same disease. They're all gone. That is the way to gradually remove them officially through the 80s, though they were all killed in the early 79, April 79.
Mm-hmm.
Now, isn't it interesting that Abbie Hoffman played around with Amy, and therefore Amy had to be already dead, and then Abby's dead. Okay, Eddie, you're back on. Just an aside.
Well, I can...
But you're talking about the effect of trying to talk about Bob other than on the air. You know what I mean? That's the point. You're trying to talk to somebody when you're not on the air with me sharing the Wednesday night phenomenon. We can almost say that Bob only exists every second Wednesday, right? And so you get embarrassed because you can't cover yourself when you're talking about me in another medium, which is the human scale face-to-face stuff.
Well, see, this is okay for other prophets. I mean, like, you take Moses and he says, you know, you go along and they're in the desert, they need some guidelines, and he says, and they say, yeah, he sounds pretty good, but... If I start looking at my neighbor's donkey in a possessive way, you start to go to Rome, you like the architecture, you like the collection in the Vatican, you say, this is not looking bad. The Virgin Mary, she looks at you everywhere you look, but then you think of how she gave birth. You see, there's these bottom lines. Like I once, it hit me in a flash, a real epiphany, that your bottom line is on the same latitude as your third ear.
Yeah, a third thumb.
Oh.
Because the thumb is the symbol for tactility.
Oh.
You look at the June 3rd, 1968 cover issue of TV Guide, you see a cover painting by Salvador Dali.
Mm-hmm.
And he presented two TV screens on the thumbnails. So two thumbs, screens on the thumbnail, therefore symbolizing the tactile quality of television. He knew his McLuhan at that point. That's June 3rd, 1968. You can look it up. So Bob is basically not the third ear or the third eye. He's the third thumb. All right? That's new dogma for you.
It certainly is.
But you were going on. Continue.
It's just that I guess I really am discarded because when I say this next statement, I don't even know who's saying it. I don't believe that Jimmy Carter was replaced by an android because the implications of that...
It's unspeakable. Well, did you notice? Do you know what Jimmy Carter does now?
Well, he builds houses in New York.
That's right.
Poor people.
Yeah, yeah. He's shipped around the country.
In the pole.
And if you put any pictures of him together with several other pictures from a year or so ago, there are no similarity in his photogenics. In the newspaper. The point is, he's being forced. He's like, remember the Bolsheviks that replaced, control him, are state socialists. They're still trying to build housing for people. They're still working on that old, liberal welfare kind of concept. And therefore, they've got him still operating within their time zone, going around building housing for poor people. I mean, the poor guy is overworked.
But if I read Robert Carroll...
No, don't read him. But okay, go ahead.
Who finally found, took 40 years, how Lyndon Johnson stole the state Senate election of 1948.
A long time ago, right?
Yeah, it took a long time. That has a nice Sherlock Holmes closure to it, except it took a long time and all the principals are dead. But when I accept your kind of, or try to accept your kind of detective work about...
Yeah.
About... another kind of huge political theft. Someone stole the presidency in 1978. I can't feel that nice, comfortable closure of, the clues, the last piece in place. I don't...
Yeah, your problem is anthropomorphic. You're still being anthropomorphic. You're thinking the human mind, the old detective work, the Edgar Allan Poe syndrome is anthropomorphic based, right?
Yeah.
You feel comfort because the human mind is working on it. But to bring in robotoids brings in something what you would think is inhuman and therefore not anthropomorphic, and it leaves you cold. So it's a direct threat. The information is a perceptual threat to your basic anthropomorphism, which is pinkness.
Yeah.
I mean, remember...
Okay. We should cut you off there, Edward.
Eddie,
that's
stay.
Fine.
Okay, go back and get in line, Ed, and you can come in after Sean, all right?
Good night, gentlemen.
Good night, Edward. Okay, Bob, time to move on. I got another caller.
Thanks.
Okay, you're doing well. You're very...
Yeah, I'm ready.
You're up tonight, up tonight. And I hope it's not just a performance.
No, I think I'm capable of this by myself.
Okay. You are listening to the Church of the Subgenius Radio Hour or so, and my name is Michael Dyer.
But it really doesn't matter with me now.
Who cares? And with me is J.R. Bob Dobbs. And hello, you're on the air.
Hello. Or creativity, Mike. That's like the most primal anthropomorphic perception, right? Or is that not a child? You know, Mike, that really brings up a big thing here. You know, if there's no calls, I think I could give a little sermon here for a few seconds. What does this all revolve around? If Adam, the first Adam's job was to name the animals, all right? If that was his job, what about this process of naming? And as some people say, we become our names. Well, if you go back to Plato and the dialogue Name for Cratylus, Cratylus, the follower of Heraclitus, Plato has this exchange of arguments between Socrates and Cratylus, and this relates to the baby crying. Socrates says, "But if these things are only to be known through names, how can we suppose that the givers of names had knowledge, or were legislators before there were names at all? And therefore, before they could have known them, the names, that is." Cratylus responds, "I believe, Socrates, the true account of the matter to be that a power more than human..." Ha, see? Not anthropomorphic. "...that a power more than human gave things their first names, and that the names which were thus given are necessarily their true names." All right, now, what do I mean when I say language is a macro myth? And then the visual space extensions, Gutenberg Galaxy, the Marconi Galaxy, the tactile zone are macro myths. Well, we go to this point. Here's something, there's a fact that will help you understand how the old macro myth of language represents a huge collective bank of experience. And this is what it is. Language gives the infant... We heard the infant. Language gives the infant access to hundreds of thousands of years of human experience, millions of man hours previously spent developing the concepts with which language furnishes him. It is at least questionable whether anyone would have an effective incentive, to think in the absence of a going language, an ongoing macro myth, an environment that you would use, that would use you too. Access, if you didn't have access to the world of sound,
would have, okay, do that again. It is at least questionable whether anyone would have an effective incentive to think in the absence of a going language, access to the world of sound, and older persons eager to initiate him into the linguistic world. Even if the child did have an incentive, he might well never really get his thinking drives off the ground. Instead of forming the concept of mama or man, as he is in fact so urgently coached into doing, he might waste his time forming fruitless and relatively unreal categories. He might group together, for example, all upright brown smoothish things, chair legs, tree trunks, brown painted oars leaning against houses, and so on. He might group them all together, all right? Or he might form a concept grouping all small fuzzy yellow things, dandelions, certain caterpillars, but only certain ones, pieces of fluff from two of his mother's dresses, and other miscellanea. You see, we never get off the ground. But then that explains Captain Beefheart. He didn't go to school, right? So he didn't get massaged by the verbal medium at the time, though he did get massaged by other media. Therefore, that could have left him in that primitive state of it's fetal almost, his ESP, his ability. So the disservices of language may be to snuff out telepathy, but the point is that language as an environment represents the countless input and energy and work of millennia of human experience.
Okay.
All right. So then just this radio station represents the work that went into making electricity. And then this particular environment, much man hours, much time, much compact. So how do you distill that whole environment into a little mythic situation or myth, a compact distillation of the collective effort? Well, you call it a macro myth. So we lost that caller with they couldn't wait, right? Okay, Mike, that's how I relate to the baby. All right. That's Robert. Robert's a philosophical-looking guy. What do you think of that concept? Now, do you see how movie and later languages, media as languages, would represent, you know, man hours of millennia? And you can't replay all that data in rebuilding each environment, so they become mythic and given and cliché and accepted and part of our perceptual formation. That makes sense, doesn't it?
There's a whole school of thought that says language, the learning of language dims creativity, so I think you're the first one to.
Right. Oh no, that's not the one. I'm not saying that it's good that it or that it's bad that it wipes out ESP. I'm just saying that might be its particular characteristic. I think that the act of acquiring language by a child is the most creative act a human being does. All right. So, and then the next most creative activity is dreaming. So no, I don't think that creativity is limited to pre-linguistic situations. So that's what you're thinking of, but that's not what I meant.
Okay, Bob, okay. We do have another call. Let's go to this call now. Hi.
Remember.
Hello, you're on the air? Yo. We have someone who just doesn't want to reach out tonight. You know, someone who's...
He's a giggler.
You were sick. Okay.
You're sick. Oh, I think he's asking for healing, Mike.
We don't normally do that.
Okay. Yeah, but... with the brain police covering us, it might be worthwhile to pull
good
off
PR,
a miracle.
Good PR, yeah.
Didn't we have the miracle theme earlier? So let's have a little healing. Okay.
Well, we do have another call on the line.
All right,
please.
Well, just close your ears. Let you do it.
If you have a question for Bob, do we have there's a theme evolved tonight? Usually themes help callers, don't they?
Yeah, who are the brain police?
All right, we can try that one. Hello, who are the brain police? Well, it scared them off.
It's a busy night.
Somebody there.
Are they broadcasting busy signals? Business. Busy.
We'll lose that one, too.
All right. Well, I guess some rules. Mike, names, if... Where did names come from? Where did the process of naming come from if you think of it verbally? Now, if language controls us, then the new forms of naming are the electric media, which, okay, now what did you want to say? You had a comment.
I had a comment about dreaming.
Yeah.
What caught my eye the other day was...
Your eye? See, visually biased guy, right? But kinetic.
All four of them.
Okay. A tetrad, tetrad.
There is a new director who is very interested in dreaming. That horror director, have you heard of him? He's Canadian. He puts Cronenberg in his films, which I think is very interesting. Anyway, his whole deal is that given that you dream a third of your life away, it's as important as your waking dreams.
Well, that's true. And dreaming is where everybody is one. Sleep is when we're one. Now, that's why what's interesting is that in conscious daylight, speech unifies us. At night, when we're asleep, dreaming unifies us. But the content of both speech and dreaming is man. I don't mean that anthropomorphically, but physically, physiologically, man is the content. And what is that man? It's an interval thing. You know, it's not spirit, it's not matter, it's in between. It's generating both the content for the daylight speech medium and content for the dream activity, right? And then it becomes user's content, each individual. So the big significance of Finnegan's Wake, while it's a holy office, is that Finn referred to the old tribal macro myths like speech, print, magazines, radio, movies, newspapers. These macro myths were Finn, but it was Finnegan awake. The macro myth archetypes are now dreaming awake. We're in a collective situation where our extensions, our macro myth extensions, are dreaming awake. So where does that leave our dreaming activity in relation to a collective dreaming? And what does that mean for visionary experience, which is a way of waking up out of the dream? Traditionally, the seer wakes out of the dream. He relates the secrets of the external world to the secrets of the inner world in that interval. But if we're collectively drowning in a state of dreaming awake, how do you wake out of that state? How can we get our media to wake out of their own state? In other words, this brings in media ecology. We've got to collectively wake up the dreaming state.
Maybe there's a clue to be taken from the Japanese who actively practice an art in which they control the directions of their own dreams while dreaming. They take night classes. They go
right
to a network for learning classes on how to do this.
Yeah, it's isn't it called lucid dreaming? They call it lucid dreaming over here. Yeah, they have those kind of classes here, because we've gone east since the 60s anyway. So we're absorbing their cultural traditions. But, no, see, that's trying to wake up. That's becoming conscious in your private area, in your own body. Now, we are discarnate, therefore we don't exist, as I explained 2 weeks ago. We're appendages of the dance of the various macromyths, all right? They are in a state of dreaming awake. Okay, how do we wake them out of that state? The only thing to do is give them the old what for. Kick the, you know, what out of them. In other words, we got to stop them. Right? In other words, kill them. That's the only way to wake them up. Let's kill these media archetypes. Let's have that media strike. That makes sense, doesn't it? Okay. Four-fisted tail to Bob anymore?
No.
No more calls? Okay. So that answer, you see, we're talking about, I'm not, like you said, you anticipated that guy's call or something. You were thinking something that they brought up, right? You said you told them. You told them to think that. Remember you just said about 10 minutes ago? You said, I told them that. I thought that. Remember that?
It could be.
Yeah, you said that. Now, that's in this situation where we are subsumed in this collective Finnegan's awake, these collective archetypes dreaming awake, therefore they're hallucinating, we can naturally, as a byproduct, have telepathy. Therefore, anybody can take credit for anything. That's a global Esperanto.
Let's go to the phones.
Oh, I have another call. Okay.
Hi, it's Carolyn. Us, do you think?
Is that Mike Hansen? Let's go back to the other procedure.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, you're on the air.
Am I on the air? Okay. This is Antidroid here.
Yeah, you were here 2 weeks ago.
That's right.
Did you guys recover all right?
Oh, we're in good shape, yeah.
They were here 2 weeks ago in person in your position.
Antidroid?
Yeah, Andrew, but Android, you know, he's trying to be post-anthropomorphic, you know.
Okay, I just wanted to say that I put some of what you've been talking about into practice. This is my thing, not so much to understand, but just to experience.
For us to experience or you to experience?
Well, I want to share my experience.
Yeah, you did it. Okay.
Okay. And this is in my Tai Chi, and I've been thinking about being in the interval.
Yeah.
And I found that my form dramatically has improved when I learn in a traditional way, Wu-style Tai Chi, and when I follow the count, the interval behind the count,
yeah,
my form suddenly becomes a quantum leap. in terms of quality. I taste emotion.
Well, Tai Chi is a Japanese art?
It's Chinese.
Chinese, but it has that Japanese area because the Japanese are the masters of the interval. So you're just turning Japanese with my work. You know, you're applying the proper sensory bias of tactile interval to that art.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So I just called to say that it works.
That Bob's working on that level for you.
That's right.
That's a fine testimony, Andrew. The thing is, remember I explained that the Japanese were hoiked up as an icon in the 70s and early 80s because of the tactile effect of the mixed media dreaming awake situation, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the reason the Japanese are hoiked up is that their sensory bias, which is expressed in their phrase, "I know it from head to toe," represents a plenary or total feeling of command of the situation, a mastery of based on the interval.
They somatize what they
somatize?
What they know. Somatize. They take knowledge or a feeling of knowing and they relate it to their body rather than just to their mind.
But not in either, right? That's the point. Not just your body, not just your mind, in the interval between the two.
Between the two.
Yeah, that's what you're doing when you're saying you're applying it to Tai Chi.
Mm-hmm. So is that left brain, right brain or
it's
right
both.
In the middle?
It's right in the middle of the corpus callosum. I mean, the center of the brain is a tactile medium. The corpus callosum is the thing that has the dialogue between the left and right hemispheres.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Okay, great. The other thing is I wanted you just to go over something you did last week about this quantum leap we've taken since the pinks have...
The human scale?
No, I have caught on to poetry. And are you now using poetry?
Oh, the oral tradition.
The oral tradition.
Versus the kinetic and the old oral versus visual dialectic, now subsumed into the kinetic and the...